Good morning, we are short one for quorum, but we're going to go ahead and proceed with our non-required action items and hope that Mayor Triolo joins us shortly to make our quorum. Good morning, this is the Palm Beach Metropolitan Planning Organization meeting of Thursday, March 20th. And it's about 9:15, and should we do the roll call? Yeah, go ahead, do the roll call.
Commissioner Valachey? Commissioner Berger?
Here.
Commissioner Santa Maria? Vice Mayor Burdick?
Here.
Mayor Taylor? Mayor Wilson?
Here.
Deputy Mayor Haney?
Here.
Councilmember Magis? Commissioner Fitzpatrick?
Here.
Mayor Glickstein? Vice Mayor Harrison? Mayor Triolo? Vice Mayor Jablin? Councilmember Davis?
Here.
Commissioner James?
Here.
Commissioner Opel? Commissioner Materio?
Here.
Commissioner Wilhite? I'm sorry, Councilman Wilhite? And Mayor Ferrari?
And alternate for Vice Mayor Wendy Johnson?
Thank you.
Jim Koretsky with the Town of Jupiter.
All right, so we are one short of a quorum, so we will proceed with any items that we can that are informational. So at this time, if we can all please rise for the prayer and pledge by Mayor Wilson.
Let's bow our heads, please. O Heavenly Father, we come to you once again with bowed heads and humble hearts, thanking you that in your love and wisdom, you invite us to accomplish your acts of love, your acts of service, and the kindness here on this earth. Thank you for the opportunity to help to meet the needs of mankind. Continue to bless our country, our state, our county, and the cities at which we represent. Bless the folks that are in this room. Continue to bless all of our families as we do the work for mankind. For this and many things we say, amen.
Amen.
Would you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you all. The next item on our agenda is comments from the chair, and I'm just going to comment that I'm thrilled that I am still here, and I will continue to still be here.
We are too.
I am very, very grateful and thankful to continue to lead this organization. So that concludes my comments. Nick, Executive Director's report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My first item was to congratulate you as well as Vice Mayor Jablin on the successful re-election bid last week. Second item for the board, I mentioned the Palm Beach Zoo catching on to our initiative in the PGA corridor regarding promoting alternatives to driving alone. MPO staff had an opportunity to meet with the zoo director as well as some of their staff and learn a little bit more about their initiatives. And I just want to say this is a very fun part of the job. It's an unexpected partnership, but it does reaffirm my conviction that good ideas come from anywhere, and I really enjoyed being with them. And also wanted to highlight that Angel Streeter from the Sun Sentinel wrote a nice article about their initiatives last weekend in their paper. So, next item for me, I mentioned this last month, the Jog Road Extension did open just in time for the Honda Classic. So that was on February 26th, and we are very excited about that improved connection to the turnpike for North County residents, as well as the relief that we're hoping to see at the 710 North Lake intersection. Next item for me, this will be on your agenda next month, I hope, depending on how quickly we can move through the advisory committees as well as the Jupiter Town Council. But we did have, finally, the meeting with MPO staff, Jupiter staff, and DOT staff and consultants regarding the US 1 bridge rehabilitation project over the Loxahatchee River. We, just as background to that initiative, that's a project that's scheduled for construction in fiscal year 16. And it's going to not only rehabilitate the mechanism used to open and lower the bridge, but also add pedestrian facilities to the bridge. The MPO, through its members, had asked DOT to pursue adding dedicated bicycle facilities to that bridge rehabilitation project as well. We believe that we have some alternatives that will accomplish that goal, but there may be some funding needs associated with those requests, and so we're going to present alternatives to the board for consideration, hopefully again in April, but we may have to see that in May, depending on how quickly they can get on the town schedule to present those alternatives for consideration. Next, I want to report to the board that on March 13th, I was able to speak to the Lantana Chamber of Commerce, and on March 19th, yesterday, I was at the COBRA meeting, the delegates meeting, and gave both of those groups an overview of the role of the MPO as well as their ability and opportunities to participate in this public process to make sure that we are funding projects within those areas that are important and endorsed by, important to and endorsed by those communities. Next item for me, on April 9th, I will be serving as co-chair for the Leadership Palm Beach County's Transportation Day. I've done that, I was a member of that program in 2006, and I've served as the co-chair for Marine Industries and Transportation Day since then, since 2007 to this current year. And I just wanted to highlight that that's a group of roughly 50 individuals that participate in that program, and it's an opportunity for us to highlight the things that we're doing with respect to transportation investments in Palm Beach County. And we're actually going to be taking the class on a tri-rail train, a dedicated train, so a very unique experience. We're going to have them board at the West Palm Beach Intermodal Station, and then they're going to just take the train south to the north to the West Palm layover facility, so they can be on the train, experience it without the noise, and we'll be able to actually do a presentation on the train. So we're very thankful for the RTA folks for being able to work with us to make that happen. And then next item, we held a kickoff meeting on March 10th in Boca Raton for our FEC Quiet Zone Tiger Grant application. And I do want to take an opportunity to introduce Todd Brower, who's sitting in the back of the room. Todd Brower is with White House Group, and he is the lead for the consulting firm that will be writing the grant application submitted for the Tiger Grant. And all of our corridor communities have now been provided a sample endorsement letter that we can distribute to entities along the corridor, hospitals, schools, chambers of commerce, to allow them to express their support for our pursuit of federal funds for quiet zone infrastructure. We've also been distributing a sample resolution that can be adopted by elected bodies, illustrating our support for the Tiger Grant application. So that's it's a short-term, short turnaround to collect all that information. That application is formally due no later than April 28th, so we're gonna need all of those documents back from the folks that we're working with in your communities prior to that date so that we can include them in the application. Formally, the Broward MPO authorized the task order for White House Group on May 13th, last Thursday. So the MPO, Palm Beach and Broward, are jointly working on this Tiger Grant application. We are funding $15,000 worth of the fee to make the application, and the Broward MPO is funding an additional $12,000. So we're the lion's share of it, a slightly larger majority because we have more crossings and because there's going to be more work done up here. And we are meeting with Broward MPO staff and our consultant this afternoon, hopefully, depending on Greg Stewart's availability. He's the Broward MPO director, and he, like several of our members, I'm afraid, have been feeling under the weather. So I'm not sure we're gonna have that meeting this afternoon, but we will be having it very soon to ensure that we are all on the right page with respect to the roles and responsibilities and the approach to the grant application so we can get that done. And I also wanna note that along with Susan Haney and Shannon Materio, I will be traveling up to Washington, D.C. on April 10th for a meeting with USDOT technical staff to give an overview of our application and the particular needs associated with this request. I think that's it. Nope, one more item on there. On March 10th, last week, the Regional Planning Council Director, Michael Busha, distributed a letter to federal and state delegates, the federal elected officials as well as the state elected officials and the governor, regarding the All Aboard Florida project, and specifically asking for appropriations from both of those entities, from state and federal government, for quiet zone infrastructure, as well as requesting mitigation for railroad and waterway navigational conflicts and relocation of freight trains to the CSX corridor to free up capacity and relieve impacts of those freight trains on the FEC corridor through our eastern downtowns. And finally, asking for whatever pressure they can put on the FEC folks to resolve the access fee conversation for our Tri-Rail Coastal Link project. We are pursuing access onto the FEC corridor, and they've been reluctant in the negotiations to commit to a dollar value to allow us to utilize that corridor for the expansion of our Tri-Rail system. I will distribute that to this board later today to make sure that all of you have had a chance to review that letter. I think he did a great job of summarizing some of the major issues associated with the All Aboard Florida project and what we would like to see as reactionary actions by our state and federal agencies. I'm sure there may be a few questions about that, but I do want to say one more thing in my report. As a graduate of the University of Kentucky, I would be remiss in not reminding everyone that the March Madness tournament begins today.
Today.
And the University of Florida is the number one team overall. So we've had a hard time beating them this year. They're 3-0 against us, but we are excited for cheering them on this this next month.
Thank you, Nick. Any questions of Nick? Commissioner Kretzky?
Just one comment. I have always advocated within the town of Jupiter Council to try not to use the word quiet zone. And I'm going to just encourage at least consideration by the MPO with a little change. And the reason I say that, I'm a professional engineer. Quiet zones can be thought by some to be an impure motive, cut noise. But when, you know, the tri-rail was done, when it was down south, it was done properly, they started with what is most important, safety. Then the intersection, all the crossings were made safe as they should be, and as a result of that, it happened to qualify for a quiet zone. So we try in Jupiter really try to put the emphasis on we need to make sure that the crossings are safe. And in the north end, where we didn't get the safety improvements of tri-rail, our residents are going to be particularly at great, much greater risk of unsafe situations. So I just wanted to just kind of share that perspective. So, you know, quiet zones defines, if you will, a crossing, but on the other hand, I couldn't help myself but not also emphasize here. It's really, but I know you all know that. But.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. And we have had that conversation over the last several months as we've embarked on this, so we appreciate you bringing that up. Commissioner Berger.
Thank you. I just want to take a moment to tell everyone I was at the COBRA meeting yesterday when Nick spoke, and it's the first time I've heard him speak outside the realm of the MPO as our director. And I've always thought that he really runs a good meeting here along with Chair Haney. But to see him interact with such a large group, and COBRA is a massive civic organization, and they can fill a room with 150 people at the drop of a hat. And not only was Nick's presentation well done, he actually focused on that area and the projects that are coming forward in that area. So the questions were good, and I thought all around, Nick, if that's what you do when you go out in the public all the time, we should be very, very proud of you.
Thank you. Commissioner James.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple things on the Tiger Grant. I was in D.C. last week and on behalf of West Palm Beach at the National League of Cities, and in that capacity I did have a chance to speak with several members of our congressional delegation. The Tiger Grant application was among our list, the city's list of priorities. A question that what kept coming up was how much, when do we get the numbers on what the amount of the application will be?
The short answer to that is our need in Palm Beach County is $17.9 million,
okay,
as estimated by the DOT's preliminary analysis and adjusted by me to include additional infrastructure needed in the northern part of our corridor, where they said they thought All Aboard Florida would be constructing sufficient infrastructure to be eligible for quiet zone designation. I took a more conservative approach and added infrastructure costs to the northern part of the county to account for what I think will ultimately be an additional local investment. So 17.9 for Palm Beach County is the estimated number. The caveat to that is All Aboard Florida, who will be building the infrastructure if the intention goes forward, that we would add this, the list of stuff that would be built along the corridor to provide safer crossings and potentially make ourselves eligible for quiet zone designation, will be done through a design build service, and they have not agreed to those numbers. That's our estimate of what reasonable unit prices are. And I do want to point out that the MPO, through the endorsement of the DOT's work program, has allocated $6.6 million to this cost for the Palm Beach portion of the corridor. So you take 17.9 minus 6.6, and you end up with about 13.3.
And that number represents...
No, 11.3. My math is terrible.
You went to the University of Kentucky. I couldn't resist.
Ooh, Harvard takes a swing.
I'm sorry.
Good luck to you in the tournament.
Thank you. 2 o'clock today, yes. I'm not as optimistic as you are, but hey, if we win a game, I'll be happy. So the 17.6, or the, is that the delta between what all of what Florida is putting in for safety improvements?
That's right. We're assuming they're going to be building two gates at every one of their crossings along the corridor, as well as what's called positive train control. To allow us, in constant warning time indications, to allow the track to communicate with the gates. That's a major electrical expense, to allow the track to communicate with the gates so that they know how fast the trains are moving and they can drop the gates in an appropriate amount of time for the higher speed trains. Our incremental cost is to add the other two gates and a power out indicator, which is a requirement for eligibility for quiet zone designation.
And a final question, Madam Chair. You mentioned in your report, Nick, that there were some endorsement letters that would be required. And is there a point person in each city, and I'm thinking obviously of West Palm Beach, that is responsible for handling that? Or how is that going to be coordinated through the municipalities? Or is that separate from municipalities?
No, we're asking for each of our municipal partners to designate someone. In West Palm, that person is Alex Hansen.
Okay, fine.
So he's the point person for us. And then Kim Delaney is going to be accumulating all of those support letters on behalf of the MPO to make sure that they're properly included in the grant application.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Commissioner, one more question, yes?
Yeah, are we going to, on the agenda, are we going to be discussing all aboard Florida later on, or is this it?
Honey, it's not agendaed, so if you would like to jump in.
Okay, I got to, on the, I was reading the letter and was talking about environmental ESA, I guess, or whatever. But there isn't, is there any concern about, there's a lot of in wilderness areas south of here, and I'm seeing that this whole corridor is going to be like a Berlin Wall when it comes to animal movement from one side of the tracks to the other. So is there any, you know, a recognized environmental concerns or mainly point of the environmental statements, is there any thing in there about moving small reptiles and mammals from one side to the other? Is this, you know, is this, and especially when you get up north, there's, you're going to have a lot of areas that are migratory zones and stuff. Is there any consideration in, when they do this?
Nick, can I take that?
Actually, I'm motioning to Kim Delaney because she's probably more familiar with that particular question. So Kim is with the Treasure Coast Regional Planning Council and has been really the MPO's contract liaison to make sure we're staying on top of these types of questions.
So, thanks. So Kim Delaney for the record, Treasure Coast RPC. As we understand the way the Environmental Impact Statement, or EIS, process works, the Federal Railroad Administration is charged with reviewing all the data that's come, that's been provided by All Aboard Florida, and they are developing an environmental impact statement that must address all of the national environmental policies and protections. For example, it's a National Environmental Policy Act document that requires compliance with protection of listed species and any other environmental considerations like that. So the federal agency is responsible for addressing that in the issuance of the document. It's supposed to be published in April or May. That's the latest estimate I've gotten from their staff. And then agencies like the Regional Planning Council, all the local governments, entities like MPOs and others can review the document. The Regional Planning Council will absolutely be providing comments on record. And I know that we historically have always raised those issues in the past. I can't imagine why they wouldn't be raised again. But we haven't seen the document, so we don't know what they're proposing to do yet with respect to mitigation. So in terms of animal crossings and those types of things, we can certainly address it. What we do understand in speaking with the FRA staff, which is the Federal Railroad Administration, is that the work that's being proposed, which is adding a second track, for example, that piece of it, is a replacement of a track that was historically there. So the level of environmental impact is not presumed to be as severe as it would be if they were building a new track, right? Because there's already an existing track there. So I'm not sure what the document will say with respect to that issue, but I do know in speaking with their staff, there's not as high a level of threshold as there will be, for example, for the new track that's being constructed along State Road 528. So I don't know if that fully answers the question.
Well,
but
what I was talking about was the continuous fencing is going to be a major change.
And we don't know where that fencing is going to go or what it might be comprised of yet. The FRA staff who was here doing diagnostic field reviews indicated some of it could be bougainvillea and landscape material to prevent people from getting in the corridor, which there are many who have suggested that's a more attractive way to prevent trespassing than putting in a fence. There are others who've raised concerns that fencing should have been in years ago because there's trespassing that's taking place and it's a safety hazard. And so these are things that we'll have a chance to review. And on the subject of trespassing, the FRA is very interested in working with all of our local governments and communities because trespassing is such a historic problem along the corridor, especially, for example, in Palm Beach County, we know in Lake Worth, actually Lake Worth, Jupiter, and West Palm, we know a lot of documented trespassing that's taken place over time. And so we have an opportunity to work with the agency to try to mitigate some of that because it's an existing safety problem.
Right.
Great. Thank you, Kim. Appreciate it. Commissioner Opel and Mayor Jablin have joined us, so we now have a quorum. Congratulations, Mayor Jablin.
Thank you.
And we will go back and resume our regular agenda. Item 1D, motion to adopt our agenda for March 20th. Nick, are there any changes or corrections to our agenda?
No, Madam Chair.
I will entertain a motion. Approval by Burdick, second by Berger. All in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like same. Next is approval of our minutes of February 20th, 2014. Any corrections or changes?
Second.
Moved by Burdick, second by Berger. All in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Great. Okay, we've done comments by the chair, executive directors. Consent agenda, Nick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I indicated last month, we would just be putting items on the consent agenda that we did not anticipate would warrant additional comments. Three items here, appointments to the TD board, the local coordinating board, and then as you appoint members, these are just renewal appointments of existing members, and you also have to certify the membership. And then the last item, our interlocal agreement with Palm Beach County as a host to the MPO requires that the MPO board approve board member travel. So those three items are on the agenda.
Any questions or comments of the consent items? If not, I'll entertain a motion for approval.
So moved.
Moved by Burdick, second by Materio. All those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Thank you, Nick. We'll move on to public comments. My first card is Woodrow Hay. Please come forward. We honored you last meeting and you weren't here, so we're glad to have you here. And again, thank you so much for your
And that's
service.
Exactly why I'm here this morning. I had a situation last month, which was officially my last meeting that I could not make. But I was happy to have a very strong and capable substitute who is now the permanent replacement for me, and Michael Fitzpatrick, Commissioner Michael Fitzpatrick. But I want to come here and just say to you thank you. Next to the League of Cities, Richard and Steve, this organization is top-notch. I've learned so much. Even to the point that I could have stayed in bed this morning, but I got up and came because it's just that important to me. I had opportunity to speak with Nick on some issues, and we have a top-notch organization here. Keep doing what you're doing. Again, congratulations to all those that won the election, especially to you, Susan Haining, as becoming mayor of Boca Raton. Job well done. So again, I just wanted to come here. You will be seeing me around. You didn't get rid of me that easy. But this is a top-notch organization. I want to thank you for all that I've learned, and I look forward to working with everybody. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your service.
By the way, I didn't get voted out. I was term limited.
Thank you, Woodrow. We look forward to seeing you. My next card is Abby Brennan from the Village of Tequesta.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Board of Directors. Thank you for the opportunity to address you today. I am Abby Brennan. I'm the mayor of the Village of Tequesta. I am speaking to some of the issues with All Aboard Florida, which I know everybody else is doing these days, but Tequesta has not been represented here before. There are many issues, and they do obviously have to do with the Loxahatchee River Bridge. Our issue, in addition to property values and access by voters, is actually a public safety issue. We have our public safety building, which is west of the tracks, and our US 1 corridor and all of our commercial, 95%, is east of the tracks. And what is occurring when the bridge gets cranky, and it does often, when it will not lock down and a train is traveling from the north, it will block all three and the only exits to US 1. So at that time, our public safety cannot respond, and that happened just 2.5 weeks ago. It took 2 hours for them to fix the bridge, and those gates were down. Fortunately, we did not have an emergency at that time. In addition to that, we also have Marine 85, which is the only advanced life support boat for two counties. It cannot get under the bridge when it is locked down. And we have on our other side the sandbar, skiing, all of those things. So I'd like to say thank you to also to Councilmember Kuretsky on this. It is a public safety issue to us. Because we are kind of tucked away up there in the northeast, I'm not quite sure that we have been truly represented. I also want to mention our public safety, our fire rescue responds not only to the village of Tequesta, but we are under contract with Palm Beach County to service Jupiter up in the north and as well as unincorporated Palm Beach County. So I'm speaking for all of us.
Thank you, Ma'am Burden. We really appreciate you coming forward, and we understand that this is a safety issue, and I know Kim is listening and taking notes, and we understand that that bridge is vital, and replacement of those mechanisms must
thank
be,
you.
Must
Kim
be
and addressed. I are on speed dial at the moment.
I'm sure. That's why we have Kim.
All right, thank you.
Thank you so much. Next card, Richard Radcliffe.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's good to have a nice chair. Same chair. Last Friday, there was a meeting with Congresswoman Frankel, and that was with the city mayor, she called, and it was a tough one because that's right during election time. Very tough time to have a meeting. But quite a few mayors showed up, and she did the same thing in Miami-Dade. And she came up here, and this was relative to her district, but probably 80% of the conversation was relative to FEC. It was interesting because there was a lot of feedback from the mayors that they had great concerns about the impact to their area and how it was going to affect them. I mean, everybody believes in the project, but some of the mayors had some questions. That being said, and it wasn't a league event, this was a congresswoman's event, but it was a consensus of the people there that Congresswoman Frankel suggested getting an EDA grant, Economic Development Administration grant, to study the economic and traffic impacts that the system would have. She also made the same suggestion to Broward County, and they're kind of running with the ball. I spoke to James Cromar, and I guess Paul's going to be working on it also. It is a grant. Felicia from her office said you may be able to get it in 3 to 6 weeks. You know, we've talked with Nick about the viability, because the question is, can enough get done in time? But when you look at some of the issues here, like this bridge, a lot of people don't have answers. So this is something that's going to look at the whole corridor. It's based on, there's three criteria. I think it's income, unemployment, and a catastrophic event can trigger the grant process and the ability to do it. And speaking with Broward, if we were to look at the corridor and stick to the and we can set the parameters, supposedly, but if we stick to that, we should through income and unemployment, because that is more economically challenged than maybe anywhere in the county. So if you want to, I know it wasn't on your agenda, and a lot of people couldn't make it, but last Friday, Broward is beginning to do it. I don't know the matching, it may be 20 or 30% matching, but I wanted to make you aware of that. and Broward is looking to do it, and I will work with them. I told them I'll work with them as a league, but I can't speak at all for the NPO. That's the first issue, and I don't know if you want to do anything with that. The second issue is I can help too. We, at this board, at this board's direction, we set up the FEC policy committee, and that policy committee met once, and they came up with a great idea of setting up a technical committee. They said, I don't know about this. So let them do it. And we have a great group. They just met yesterday, and they're really doing a great job. They're weeding through information, and thank God, Nick, is we're honing in on a better number. But I that group is really not the one, but if you need help with your resolution for the grant, please get it to me as soon as you can. And we have the original policy group, and that's where that resolution really needs to go, because it in the, you know, in the governmental process, it takes some time to pass resolutions. So kind of an update, and thank you all. And we also are working, we have a legal team. From this group, I ended up with three actual committees. There was a legal team working on the crossing agreements, and we got more information yesterday, and we're bringing that back and trying to get some sort of boilerplate language that's going to, you know, that all aboard Florida will accept, and every city is going to have to make their own agreement and make the, do their own negotiations, but we're trying to get something basic for everybody to use.
Thank you, Richard, for your advocacy. Nick, did you want to comment on anything Richard just reported on?
I'm very happy to work with the Broward MPO as far as pursuit of an ADA grant. I did express some reservation as to whether we would be able to do it in time to react and provide useful information regarding the All Aboard Florida project, but if the board's direction, I'd be happy to pursue that.
Well, you know, I think, and, you know, everybody give the nod, you know, touch base with Broward, obviously, they've taken the lead on it. Since our Tiger Grant deadline is April 28th, that seems to be our greatest focus at this point to get that done. But if we can concurrently look into the EDA grant, if it's a benefit to us, you know, I don't have any issue with partnering with Broward and moving that forward if everybody's in agreement with that. Okay, great. Okay, next item. Appointment to Citizen Advisory Committee. Nick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to remind the board that we are, in an ongoing manner, we're soliciting nominations for our Citizens Advisory Committee. And as we presented in recent meetings, it is a one-to-one relationship between the board members that sit on the MPO and the committee members that participate in the Citizens Advisory Committee. So this month we have a nomination by Commissioner Burdick of Mr. Andre Verona. For your consideration.
Any discussion? Commissioner Burdick, do you want to take the lead on making the motion to appoint?
I'll move to nominate Andre to the Citizens Advisory Committee.
Okay, motion by Burdick, second by Berger. Any discussion? All those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, like sign. Congratulations, Mr. Verona. Next item is motion to approve City of Green Acres for membership on the Technical Advisory Committee.
Move to Mr. Lanahan to the Citizens Advisory Committee.
Do we have a motion? Do we have a second? Motion by Burdick, second by Berger. Further discussion? All those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, like sign.
Madam Chair, if I could, just to clarify, the membership on our Technical Advisory Committee is slightly different. It actually is a two-step process. First, the board would recognize an entity to have a seat on the committee, and then you would recognize the individual to sit in that seat. And so Green Acres does not currently have a seat. We need to add them to the committee first.
The motion would have been more appropriate to recognize the City of Green Acres as a...
Well, we can do it. We'll just do it backwards. That's okay. All right, so now the motion is to recognize Green Acres because we've already appointed Mr. Lanahan. Yeah, all right, so motion by Burdick to
the City of Green Acres.
And second by... Second by Commissioner Davis. All those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, so now we got it. All right, let's move on to West Palm Technical Advisory Committee. This is an appointment of Mr. Alex Hansen.
That's right, Madam Chair. Alex Hansen is currently the alternate for the Technical Advisory Committee seat for the planning seat for the City of West Palm Beach. They're asking to designate him as the primary representative and Ms. Denise Malone as their alternate, and also asking to add Ms. Miranda Beatles as the alternate for their engineering seat. West Palm has two seats on the Technical Advisory Committee.
Okay. So
moved.
So Moved by James, second by Burdick. Further discussion? All those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Now let's go on to amendment number one of our adopted 2035 long-range transportation plan. Nick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we consider this item, I do, I neglected to put it on the agenda, but I do need a motion to receive and file proof of publication that we've advertised this amendment.
Okay, moved by Berger, second by Burdick. All those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Now for the content of the amendment, I want to introduce Arlene Tanis. Arlene is our FDOT liaison to the Palm Beach MPO, and she's going to be providing an overview of the requested amendment.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board. Arlene Tanis from FDOT. The item before you is an amendment to the existing 2035 long-range transportation plan to add the Northwood Connector. If you recall, back in the fall, both Miami-Dade and this area was awarded a Tiger Grant, which made this possible. There is also a connector that will be happening down in Miami-Dade, and the approval of this amendment will allow for connection between the FEC and the CSX rail in the Northwood area along the 24th Street alignment. The Tiger Grant funded this approximately $7.5 million, and the remaining funding is being done by the state. Phase one, we all already have funding in 2014, and phase one should be completed by 2016. And then there's a phase two, which should be completed by 2018 or 17. And it's essential that this amendment be approved because we cannot even use the money if it's not in the cost feasible long range transportation plan.
Excellent. Any questions of Arlene? So we basically need to amend our plan to include this so we can accept the Tiger Grant funds
exactly
that we've already been awarded.
Yes.
So I would say this is very important next. Very good. Motion by Burdick, second.
Second
by Materio. Further discussion? All those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, like saying thank you, Arlene. Appreciate it. Nick, next item is motion to transmit the draft 15-16 Unified Planning Work Program.
Okay, the Unified Planning Work Program is the federal term for an MPO's budget and work program. It is a statement of work outlining the planning priorities and activities to be carried out within a metropolitan planning area. Our UPWP includes a description of the work to be done, the resulting products, who will perform the work, the time frames for completion, the cost, and the source of the funds. We operate on this document because we run our funds through the state system. We operate on a state fiscal year, so this would take effect fiscal year 15 and 16 would begin July 1st of this year because the state operates on a July 1 fiscal year as opposed to the county and the feds operating on an October 1 fiscal year. I do want to amend the description because the estimated cost of the program is really approximately $2 million. Those are the funds that are going to be coming to this organization to perform our various planning activities and tasks, both staff activities as well as consultant services, so that we can partner with you and your local governments to do feasibility studies, to identify appropriate areas where we want to make transportation investments. The additional funds that were utilized to get to the $3 million in the agenda item are funds allocated to the South Florida Regional Transportation Authority, the RTA, that operates Tri-Rail. Those funds don't come through the Palm Beach MPO. They're just reflected in the document for information only. Lastly, I do want to note that this document is a draft, and it will be revised both to incorporate board member input. I know through meetings with several of you, there are suggested additional initiatives that ought to be included in this document, and we will be doing those things, as well as advisory committee suggestions and any changes that are required to address review agency comments. Federal Highways gets to see this, the Federal Transit Administration gets to see this, and the DOT at the state level gets to see this document, and there are compliance items that we need to include, and then it will come back before you for final adoption at your May meeting.
Questions of Nick. Commissioner Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nick, once this becomes finalized and the MPO board approves it and it goes on its merry way, can changes be made to it? Is it a floating document?
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Further questions of Nick on the Unified
And in fact, in response to that question, just 2 months ago, we brought to you an amendment to our current UPWP to reflect the services that are being provided to the MPO by South Florida Commuter Services. That was both the public outreach material that we're trying to promote, as well as the emphasis we're placing on the PGA Boulevard corridor and the analysis of commuting traffic to that area.
So it's a living, breathing document that's certainly amendable as things go forward. Further discussion or questions to Nick of this, then I'll entertain a motion to transmit the 1516 UPWP. Moved by Berger, second by Burdick. Further discussion, all those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Great, next is our fiscal year 15 Palm Beach Metropolitan Planning Organization operating budget. Nick?
All right, this is really an artifact of the interlocal agreement between Palm Beach County and the MPO. The interlocal agreement that we have with them for staff services and administrative functions requires the board to approve the request for the MPO to include their budget into the county's budgeting process. So essentially, we're trying to represent similar information to what's included in the UPWP, but there are some differences in the numeric totals represented in the county's budget ask because of the way they do some of their accounting practices. And so before I walk through this, just one page that we've provided to you, but before I walk through this item, I did want to introduce who's standing in the back. Marilyn Tincher is the MPO's financial analyst. And I just wanted to introduce her to the board members so that you understand that there is a person behind the challenges faced by this organization. We really have to live in three worlds. Because we're a hosted MPO, we have to comply with county accounting practices and understand their system. Because we pass through federal funds through the Florida Department of Transportation, we have to operate within their system. And then our documentation all has to be compliant with federal highways and federal transit administration requirements on a federal level. So we get to live in all three of those worlds, and Maryland does a fantastic job of managing that challenge. So I just wanted to recognize her. Brief comments on the document in front of you, because I do want you to understand why it's different from the UPWP that you just approved. First, the base expenditure budget and revenue, the request are really inflated numbers to conform to county accounting practices that are required to address the differences in our fiscal years, because we're operating on a state fiscal year, the county's operating on a federal October 1 fiscal year. And so I just want to remind everyone that the MPO, as an organization, we receive federal grant funding to operate, both to pay our staff salaries, to pay for the building that we occupy, the space that we occupy out at the Vista Center, and also to pay for the consulting services. About $1.07 million of that comes through the Federal Highway Administration directly to the MPO, and then another $630,000 comes from the Federal Transit Administration for our transit planning activities, and another $48,000 comes from the Florida Transportation Commission on Transportation Disadvantage Services. That money we pass directly to PalmTran for operation of the PalmTran Connection service. So I just wanted to remind you that although the numbers on the backup material are high, the MPO still has to constrain its operating expenses to no more than roughly $1.7 million per year, plus any carryover from previous years. Second item I wanted to note is that the supplemental revenue request, we're showing an additional $621,000 on that budget document, $621,000. That's not actually a supplemental request, it's just the way the county's asking us to show the Federal Transit Administration and Transportation Disadvantage Grant Funds. So that gets me to the two points that are important as far as this board and its actions with respect to the county budget request. First, I'm asking for the MPO board to approve a request for me to add two additional staff positions. I've announced to you in the previous months that we have two vacancies that we're working actively to fill. In addition to that, I would like to add a new chief planner position to serve as more of a deputy director of the MPO in order to provide better administrative oversight of our major programs, the long-range plan, the transportation improvement program, which is our funding document, as well as the administration of our budget document, the UPWP. I do really appreciate Commissioner Berger's endorsement of my participation at COBRA. It's a challenge to administer the day-to-day activities of an organization and to perform the outreach that's appropriate for what I think the MPO ought to be doing. So I think asking you to endorse this request will help us operate much smoother as an organization. And then secondly, I'm asking for approval to add a Planner 1 position within the MPO so that we can create a position that a new college graduate is eligible to fill. Right now, we can't hire someone directly out of school because all of the requirements of every position within our organization require years of experience. And so this would create a stepping stone for someone to come out of school and enter the MPO and decide, you know, invigorate our organization with their new ideas, lessons learned from their experiences, give them an opportunity to grow up and kind of preserve the long-term health and vitality of our organization. The supplemental expenditure request is roughly $130,000, and the annual expenses associated with these two positions. That's an estimate based on the numbers for the county's average numbers for those pay grades. It may end up slightly higher than that, but that's a rough estimate. And then finally, I am asking the MPO board, secondly, to approve a request of the county for up to $160,000 in ad valorem revenue to be committed to the MPO as matching funds for our Federal Transit Administration grant. They don't have any obligation, the county doesn't have any obligation to match the Federal Highways money, the $1 million that we receive from Federal Highways, but they do offer up, and we graciously accept their offer to serve as matching cash contributions for the Federal Transit Administration. That grant is an 80-10-10 grant, so we get 80% of the money from the federal government, 10% from the state, and the county provides the remaining 10%. And that's an up-to amount. Really, to spend that much, we would have to spend every dollar of carryover from previous years, and our budget does not anticipate that occurring. So we would say a realistic number is more like $100,000. So that's the county's only cash contribution as far as their commitment to hosting the MPO, and I wanted to make that point clear to the board.
Wonderful. Questions of Nick of the operating budget? Commissioner James.
Quick question. One of the things I learned when I was in D.C. is that the Federal Highway Trust Fund is basically broke. How does that impact the MPO going forward if there isn't supplemental funds, and everybody expects there will be, but assuming worst case?
Well, worst case is that we no longer have any revenue to spend and we cease to exist as an organization. But I want to clarify that the Highway Trust Fund will not be broke in the sense that it will have no revenue to cover its outlays or commitments. It's only projected to have insufficient revenue to cover all of its outlays and commitments. And so the question will be which of those commitments continue going forward if they choose to reduce expenditures to match receipts. So there will still be planning responsibilities and there will still be federal investments in transportation, just maybe not at the level that we are currently enjoying.
So is that something that we are kind of planning for, strategically looking forward? I mean, contingency plans, if you will?
I'm not sure that that's... I'm not sure that I have a whole lot of influence over that particular issue.
No, not in Washington, but the impact. Do we have contingency plans for the adverse fiscal impact going forward on our budget? Have we thought about that?
I guess the best way I can answer that is we are living well below our means as an organization with respect to the in-house costs, our staff and our operating costs. So if we were to see significant planning revenue go away, we would reduce our consultant services and try to perform more of our responsibilities in the house.
Okay.
And we also rely on the state when they do their revenue forecasting as well. So those budgets are all, you know, living documents and amend as needed. But when we get later in the agenda, we're going to move into our desires plan. We're going to stop using the word needs and then we do the whole cost feasible thing. So
Thank you. It's
different. Further questions on the budget? Seeing none, then I'll entertain a motion for approval of the 2015 MPO operating budget.
So moved.
Moved by Berger, second by Materia. Further discussion? All those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Please pose like sign. Great, thanks. And Nick, your outreach, I think, is vitally important. I cannot emphasize that more. It was so nice to hear Commissioner Berger giving you such kudos for your outreach to COBRA. It's important that that our constituents understand what we do here. I really, really, truly believe that that is very, and that's something that I think was not emphasized in the past. And, you know, I think that's probably, you know, job one for you. So to give you the support back in the office to keep moving the ball forward, I think it's really appropriate. Advisory Committee bylaws. Citizens Advisory Committee. Nick?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The next really three items are administrative cleanup items. The Citizens Advisory Committee bylaws were brought to this body in February of 2013 for approval, and they've been living under those bylaws since that time. We've been doing a very thorough review of the bylaws for the other committees, the Technical Advisory Committee, as well as our Bicycle, Greenways, and Pedestrians Advisory Committee, trying to bring those three documents into conformity. The short history is that the last time the technical and really the MPO board bylaws were touched was in 1986. They don't reflect our current practices very well because of so many evolutions in operating behaviors and even constitution of the board itself. So as we brought the Technical Advisory Committee bylaws forward, we realized there were some inconsistencies, and we wanted to shore those up and clarify how the Citizens Advisory Committee bylaws ought to be administered, so make sure that committee runs effectively. So this is essentially a cleanup item in the backup material for the item. There are strike-through and underline changes to the document if you have any questions.
Any questions on the bylaws for the Citizens Advisory Committee? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve changes to the Citizens Advisory bylaws.
So moved.
Moved by Burdick, second by Materio. Further discussion? All those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, state same. Next, we've got the Technical Advisory Committee bylaws.
And thank you, Madam Chair. The major difference between the Technical Advisory Committee and the Citizens Advisory Committee is the relationship between the board. The Citizens Advisory Committee is the one-to-one relationship. Technical Advisory Committee is an appointment of appropriate entities to represent a technical review of transportation matters in our planning area. So that would include, you know, we don't have a DOT voting member on the MPO board, but we have DOT staff on the Technical Advisory Committee, just as an example, so, because their input is very valid and very valuable to our planning process. Other than that, the Technical Advisory Committee bylaws before you today are nearly a mirror reflection of the Citizens Advisory Committee bylaws.
Okay, any questions, discussion? I'll entertain a motion to approve the Technical Advisory Committee bylaws. Moved by Burdick, second by Materio. Further discussion? All those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, like saying. Okay, and the last item is motion to approve deletion of chapter 35 of the rules of the MPO of the Palm Beach County for the West Palm Beach Urban Study Area, revised in May of 1986. Wow. I think it is time to amend.
And Madam Chair, this particular chapter is the original Technical Advisory Committee bylaws. So what we've done, as opposed to strike through and underline updates to that chapter, we've brought before you in the previous item just a wholesale update, yeah, to the bylaws for that committee, and this would eliminate any redundancy in your documentation.
So right now we have two.
Right now you have two. That's right. As of this moment.
So this is a motion to approve the deletion of chapter 35. All right. Motion by Burdick, second by Berger, to delete chapter 35. Any further discussion? All those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. The post light sign. Great. Thanks so much. And on to our information items, the 2040 Long Range Transportation Plan. Preliminary desires plan. We no longer have needs. Now we have desires. Arturo, welcome.
And Madam Chair, good morning. Before I turn this over to Arturo, I do want to recognize, again, so that the board understands that there are people hard at work serving this community in our transportation planning. I wanted to recognize Vinod Sandanasamy. He's sitting in the back of the room. He's with the MPO as well. He is our long-range transportation planning coordinator, and he's been putting in countless hours making sure that this is both a robust and technically accurate update to our long-range plan. And then this is an introduction to Arturo's presentation. He's going to be giving you an overview of what we anticipate to be levels of congestion on our roadway network, and then the major improvements that we believe are important enough and desired to be constructed if financial constraints were not an issue. And I say that because later on the agenda as a correspondence item, you'll see the Boca Raton resolution that we had referred to last month. Not every problem has a desired roadway capacity solution. So we're trying to evolve as an organization to present only information that is desired to be invested in if the finances were available. I do want to point out that we are showing all six of the urban interchanges at this point in time from our cost feasible plan, not necessarily because we believe they are all desired. We've understood and heard quite a bit of input on those points, but because we have not yet had the opportunity, and we're going to be performing that analysis this month for presentation to you next month, we want to do a very thorough evaluation of these six locations as well as any other locations that are even worthy of consideration for having one of our major roads go up and over the other road. Now, you can make that conversation very short if the board wants to adopt a policy that says we don't like grade separated interchanges and then we won't even have to do any more analysis. That's certainly an option on the table. I professionally believe that there are potentially corridors where it makes sense to consider additional interchanges. And I would like the opportunity to perform this more rigorous analysis that we've reviewed with our technical committee over the next month and present to you what those findings are so that you have a better set of information to kind of give us an opinion about that. But, you know, you guys make the policy call. So that's in your charge to give any direction you choose. And as Susan noted, we are calling this a desires plan, not a needs plan, and I've already highlighted the reasons for that. So let me turn it over to Arturo for the presentation.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board. My name is Arturo Perez. I'm with Lefferts Consulting Engineers, and we are doing the 2040 long-range transportation plan for Palm Beach County. And like Nick mentioned, we are looking at the highway portion of what we think is desired. This is hopefully something that's going to be in the fall lineup of ABC series of shows, Desires. What we have done in the recent months is we consulted with several of the items that are done by the MPO and other organizations, such as the congestion management system that looks at existing deficiencies, some of the projects that are already included in the current TIP, local stakeholders that provided some requests for projects, the local transportation providers, the master plans like the DOT's statewide intermodal system, long-range cost feasible plan for the year 2040 through 2040, and then the Turnpike master plan, the Southeast Florida regional freight plan needs, the Southeast regional planning model. We utilize the 6-5 model, and we have recently also done some analysis with the latest version, the 7.0 model. But we took the 2040 socioeconomic data and we loaded that on top of the 2018 existing plus committed network to see what would be the deficiencies if nothing else got built beyond the committed projects. We also had a meeting with the Palm Beach County engineering staff, MPO staff, to identify some of these 2040 highway desires. And, you know, we considered local constraints and some limitations on some of the highway, on some of the roadways. We also included input from the March 5th TAC and CAC meetings into this new list. As I mentioned, we looked at the model, and this graphic here shows in red all the segments that were shown to be volume to capacity over 1.2. The ones that are in orange between 1.1 and 1.2, and the ones that are in yellow, which are a little bit hard to see in this graphic, but between 1.0 and 1.1. This is the northern part of the county, obviously, and then this is the southern portion of the county. From all the sources that I mentioned.
1.1 is 10%, right?
10% over the, yes. From all the sources that I mentioned previously and the meetings that we had, we developed this map that has the improvements shown by different colors that represent roads that are widened between existing two lanes to four lanes in red, four lanes to six lanes in blue, and existing six lanes to eight lanes in green. And then we have new facilities that are two lanes are a dash black line, and new facilities are four lanes as a dash red line. As Nick mentioned, we do have the urban interchanges that were considered in the last plan to be cost feasible. Those are shown as a black circle, but we are going to do some additional analysis to see if those should remain in the plan. This is, again, the northern portion of the county, and this is the southern portion. So from all that and the map, we have a list of projects that are categorized into three highway components: the major improvements, I-95 improvements, and Florida's turnpike improvements. And that list is included in your packet. Right now it's sorted alphabetically, and they have a number associated with each. And we have separated them into the ones that are committed through the year 2019, and the ones that are to be done from 2020 through 2040. Now this list is, you know, what is desired. In some cases, we're not gonna be able to do them because of economic constraints, and that's what we're gonna do next, is we're gonna pare down this list from the desires to actual cost feasible set of projects.
In your list, what's CON stand for in PE?
CON is construction, okay. And PE is project development and environmental study. It's a phase of where they're at. Okay, so regarding the potential urban interchanges, we're already seeking input from the committees on the methodology that we're proposing. We want to evaluate the six that were included in the 2035 cost feasible plan, and then other potential high volume intersections. We're proposing a three-tier analysis to evaluate them, and at the next MPO meeting, we're going to provide recommendations as to whether some locations are worthy of making it an urban interchange. Sure.
Trying to look at alternatives besides the urban interchange, I would hope that we could look at other ways of moving people. The estimate for the backup interchange is $90 million. So by the time you do them all on Okeechobee Boulevard, you're over $500 million. And there's got to be other ways of moving people than keeping them on expanded roadways and doing these interchanges. It will have a devastating effect on all of the businesses on Okeechobee Boulevard. So I would really stress looking at other modes of transportation as an investment in the future instead of poor roadways and interchanges.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
What is the criteria for the, how did this needs and wants list come to be?
Well, as I mentioned, we looked at the model, we met with the county engineer, the MPO staff, we had all of the jurisdictions provide, I think there was two projects, Nick, that they thought were worthy of being on the plan. The master plans from the different agencies that I mentioned here.
Right. So today's presentation is really the traditional role that you've been familiar with for the MPO. We ran a model and we said we project where there are going to be more cars on a road than the road can handle. And then we said let's widen the road. But once we had that list, then we filtered it and said, okay, if we really had the money, would we want to widen those roads? And a lot of great discussion has occurred up to this point on that particular question that helped us eliminate some of the projected needed improvements, because we wouldn't want them. So this is primarily a model-driven exercise. We did ask for input from all of our member communities, but we asked for input primarily on the types of projects that you can't measure with a model. And those are the projects we're going to be bringing before you next month as a full complement of our desired investments in transportation.
Okay.
So today we're just kind of seeing the highway component because it's the model stuff. But to Commissioner Burdick's point, we have more information for you. It's just a lot to digest, and we're doing it in two steps.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is the place where the projects would be listed, but Silver Beach Road, the work from US 1 to Old Dixie Highway has been done, but as you know, there's a military facility that's being built, and that particular from Old Dixie to Congress is really going to be congested. So I'm wondering, you know, if that particular project is going to end up on this list.
I think that's the kind of input we're looking for.
Okay.
And to be fair, Terrence Bailey also reached out to us. He thought that was a project that should be included.
Absolutely. And another, I'm sorry, if I go ahead. And another suggestion is Avenue B.
I mentioned that to you before.
Commissioner Kretzky.
Just want to state on the record that, first of all, I appreciate the effort and we're going to evaluate it, but it has never been the desire of the town of Jupiter, the 8-lane Indian Town Road, and we had, in fact, but I say that I understand you're presenting to us as an issue here, and we need to address it, but fortunately, some years ago, the county embarked on doing corridor master plans. Jupiter was the first, Indian Town was the first one that was done, and we feel very privileged to have that, and we learned a lot, and we've been managing growth and trying to expand our roadway network to fit that most cost effectively. And I'm surprised, and I heard about this from Wendy, I'm surprised to see Indian Town being proposed to be 8 lanes based on what I had understood up till now. Yeah, we thought that this southern extension of the Western Corridor would have potentially reduced the need for that and eliminated it, and then also it had always been my opinion that the interchange modification would allow the traffic to flow better and be distributed in order to eliminate the need to 8-lane Indian Town Road. And in fact, Commissioner Marcus had funded an interchange modification study some years ago, and it was an act of Congress to get anybody to consider an interchange modification. But I thought that still would seem to me to be a more cost-effective one in this case. So while I appreciate it, I'm looking at this as a recognition that there's a traffic issue in that area, and I just want to stay on the record, although I've been out of touch for a while, that I think the solution depicted on here may not be the most cost-effective one, and,
sure,
and not the most desired one. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Your job.
To add my voice to that as well, I look at Indian Town, but I'm looking at PGA Boulevard, and you're proposing to 4 lanes, to add 2 more lanes to Beeline Highway. I can't understand why it's a dead end, and I don't know where it goes. What's the justification for it? And I would tell you that my city would not be supportive of that as well.
Thank you. All right,
Nick's
gonna. Yeah. Let me just briefly comment on that one point, because I think that's an important question. So justification-wise, first, you have the additional development that is currently entitled at the Florida Research Park, so that you could see additional employment activity at that location, as well as at the North County Airport and the Pratt Whitney site. So where is the demand coming from? It would be at the build-out of those non-residential facilities, not any potential land use amendments that are being sought as far as residential development. And second, this kind of speaks to the question, and it's really a policy question to be discussed at some level by this board. Two-lane roads that operate in fairly rural areas have the potential for safety concerns, because you have slower moving traffic, potential passing issues, where if you were to widen those roads out to provide the median and four-lane capacity, it really alleviates the concern regarding those two-lane interactions with opposing traffic. So those were the justifications for it, but I do appreciate your input and wouldn't mind hearing any response that you have.
Sure.
Commissioner Materia.
Thank you. I just want to make sure that there's conversation. I know that the city of West Palm Beach is engaged currently in a process to work through the North End's economic changes, and a lot of that has to do with roadway work, and the city has been working with the DOT on the Broadway corridor, and I know that this is just a general brushstroke of things that you're foreseeing as an issue, but we feel pretty strongly that part of the problems with the Broadway corridor is that currently they're pretty wide lanes, and it's really not conducive to small businesses. We don't have any parking because there's no parking on any of those roadways, which also negates small business enterprise. So we need to consider that conversation about revitalization of some of the neighborhoods that are going to be affected by four-laning some of these roads. And I'm not really sure if that little section on the map that looks like a small little black grid, if that is a neighborhood, and it sort of got a zigzag through it that states that it's going to be a widened to four lanes. Do you see where I'm talking about? Does everybody know this little section right here?
What road?
Yeah, okay, yeah. Look on the larger West Palm Beach area. You see the little grid pattern? And there's a red four-lane indication, and it looks like it's on Flagler. And it zigzags.
It does look that way, and I think that's a mistake.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, because it's not shown as a widening part.
Yeah, it's not a widening.
Okay.
So maybe we just got the existing condition.
That's a bad mapping error.
Good, okay. So I just want to make sure the dialogue continues going forward so that as the city puts in, does their efforts to revitalize, and we're working really well right now with the city of Riviera Beach, because they're doing a road project that is going to affect both sides. So we're being good neighbors with each other and trying to be aware of what we can do both of those things, move traffic and encourage business.
One more point. I want to make sure that my comments weren't misunderstood. About 10 years ago when I was on the MPO, a flaw in the process was we had a lot of policy-constrained roadways, and therefore the traffic professionals were not even addressing them because they felt they were told by policy not to address them. That's kind of when I got involved with up in Jupiter, and so we woke up by hearing the facts. I think we want to be careful here as an MPO. Maybe there needs to even be a different legend. If we ever do, we never want to stop the traffic professionals from emphasizing overcapacity conditions and how much, because then conveniently elected officials can, I didn't realize it was going to be like that, So I just want to, because, I was learning that we really went through, that was the whole genesis behind the car and the master plan. So while I said the eight laning is undesired highly, and I said there is more cost-effective solutions, I believe, I appreciate it being put on here, because I don't want to be in denial.
Right, to see alternate votes and alternate solutions. Commissioner James.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was just wondering if you or Nick could kind of remind us of process and next steps. I know this is just a discussion, and obviously there are some projects here that have caught the eye of several of the municipalities. So where do we go from here? And obviously this isn't the last time that we can voice objections to some of these projects, but I just want you to remind us of what the next steps might be.
Well, I'll share with you what the city of Boca Raton did, and I'd like to acknowledge that Councilwoman Constance Scott from Boca Raton City Council has joined us today. We had a recent meeting, and it's under correspondence, passed a resolution. We went through all the proposed changes in our community that we found were of local concern, and we requested that several of those widenings not occur, similar to what Councilor Kresge has said. It doesn't say that we want to ignore the congestion issues, we just don't want 8-lane roads through our community. That being said, we certainly entertain, you know, alternate modes, technology changes, other you know, requirements. And I would just certainly encourage every member at this table to go back to your commissions and councils and have the conversation about what are in these long-range plans that you do not want to see in your community and identify those. And
so now is the time to start registering up those objections. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Burke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nick, could you make a note to speak to me later, because the District 5 Commissioner has some local concerns of her own.
Sure.
On Atlantic Avenue and Flavor Pick. Thank you.
Arturo, you want to finish up?
Okay, thank you. So we're going to go through the three-tier process that we're proposing to do on the urban interchanges. The first tier would look at the daily traffic that is projected for the intersection, for an intersection that has, for example, 4 lanes north-south and 6 lanes east-west, or vice versa. If the sum of the daily traffic going through that intersection is 100,000, then it would be considered to pass Tier 1. Same thing if it's 4 lanes and an 8-lane, it would be 120. 6 lanes and plus a 6 lanes, 120. A 6-lane and an 8-lane, it would be 140. And an 8-lane crossing an 8-lane, it would be 160. So that would be our first cut. And we have done that already, and we're going to be talking today later around that. Then the Tier 2 analysis would take that total projected volume for the day and divide it by the current committed number of approach lanes to the intersection. So, for example, if you have 2 northbound lefts, 3 throughs, and a right, then you would have 6 lanes northbound approach. Then westbound, you have a single left, 3 throughs, and a right. Then you have that number. And you add up all those lanes, and the maximum that we're going to have is 32 approach lanes. So we would then divide that total volume by the number of lanes, and you get a ratio. Then we're going to rank all the intersections by that ratio. And that whichever has the highest one is probably going to be in the top of the list to look at. Then the third tier would be to look at the land that is adjacent to that intersection, all the quadrants, the northeast, northwest, southwest, and southeast quadrants, and look at the right-of-way costs. And we're just going to tag them with a low, medium, or high field. And then look at the community impacts, which would be both residential and commercial, and do the same thing, low, medium, or high. And then the access impact to some of the developments in that quadrant, and also rank them low, medium, and high. And then we could come up with a scoring to see if they would pass that Tier 3. And if, I guess if an intersection goes through all three tiers, then they would be eligible to be considered for urban interchange improvement at that location. So what we'd like to do is do this analysis, and then at the April NPO meeting, which will be presenting other information, also provide the results of this three-tier analysis. In addition to that, we will provide the desires on the TSM, maintenance, air aviation and port, transit, including the PalmTran and the CFRTA, and then non-motorized bicycle, pedestrian, and greenway facilities. We will be providing a list of desires for all those categories as well. And then the results of the public involvement outreach survey effort that we're conducting currently, where we have had over 300 entries to our survey. We will also present that information at the next meeting. If you have any questions, I'd like to be able to try to answer them.
Chair, just clarification, you include the analysis and other alternatives? particularly for those urban interchanges.
In our April meeting, correct?
Yeah, as part of the other options, like transit, including Palm Tran and CFRT, we would have, again, this corridor, we were looking at adding another bus route or bus rapid transit or some other transit type of system. The only one thing that we need to, you know, keep in mind is that some of the funds that are allocated to highway cannot be spent on transit systems. They might be available for capital and purchase, but not for operation and maintenance. And that's where you can't just say, okay, take that money that you would spend on the interchanges and put them into a transit system. So
that's an important point that we need to remember. But that doesn't mean that we can't take advantage of other technologies and other mitigation strategies. Further questions of our chair? Well, thank you, our chair. We look forward to continuing this discussion next month. Next item is correspondence.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've already discussed the City of Boca Raton resolution. The other three items in your packet, the Transportation Regional Incentive Grant Program, wanted to highlight that for you. That's a program funded from documentary stamps associated with real estate transactions. I want to remind this MPO board that the first $60 million generated by doc stamps is now being allocated statewide to the Florida Rail Enterprise for rail investments, both freight and passenger rail, to enhance our economic competitiveness on a statewide scale. Because the real estate market is projected to recover, it's recovering well today, and that trend is projected to continue, we believe there will be additional revenue available from the doc stamp source that will be allocated again to this TRIP project, TRIP program. And we can submit projects for consideration through District 4 of the DOT's office to compete for some of these dollars on a 50-50 matching basis. So I just wanted to highlight that that is occurring. Wanted to recognize that the board has appointed Commissioner Opel to serve on the MPO board, and we're glad to see him continuing with us. And then also, as a final item for your information, I wanted to highlight the State Road 7 corridor, the project development environmental study that's been going on for the portion of the corridor from 60th Street north up to North Lake Boulevard. The DOT consultant team, and we've talked on numerous occasions about this project, the DOT consultant team is working very diligently to address outstanding issues regarding the environmental impacts of that project. They're trying to satisfy the federal permitting agencies by reducing the footprint of the project. Originally, when that project was presented to this board, they showed a 12-foot shared-use pathway on the east side of that State Road 7 extension corridor that would have been a critical component of our regional greenways and trails system. In order to reduce the impact of the project and increase its likelihood of getting environmental clearance, the DOT consulting team has reduced that 12-foot pathway to only providing sidewalks on the west and on the east side, as well as bicycle facilities within the roadway. The MPO said, boy, that's not exactly what we had envisioned for the corridor. It's not the project development presentation that was made to this board. We would like you to go and do what you can to provide that shared use pathway on the east side as part of our regional network. And I'm providing the DOT's response, which basically says, we're between a rock and a hard place. We want what you want, but we also want to get permitting for this facility, and we're going to do everything we can to provide your goals in the project.
Next item, member comments. Any member of this board have any comments that they would like to share? Yes,
I have they're mainly questions that I'd like to find out sometime. For instance, what's the gas tax money from Boynton, for instance? Where does it go, and how much of it comes back? And a comment about the widening rural roads to help safety. Well, in the city of Boynton Beach, there's at least, I'm guessing, one bicyclist per month that is knocked off. So, you know, cost-benefit-wise, if we're talking how much is it per death are we talking about, then it might be better places to allocate that money. And I'm curious, I haven't heard any discussion of overpasses for the FBC instead of intersections. I just, I know a lot of places you can't do that. I'm just curious, you know, like how long do you need for that? How wide? How high? And what would be the cost? And then, like Commissioner Burdick was talking about alternatives, I was, you know, in Key West they have those like runabouts. Is there any discussion about allowing electric golf carts, kind of, you know, beat the golf carts running around? Is there, you know, that would be a lot smaller, cheaper, any way of putting that in? And then for advanced planning, I wondered, you know, is there acquiring land, if you know you're going to have a road out in 10 years or need it in 15 years, is there any plan to save money, like start acquiring businesses and residents as they come up for sale? I mean, keep them as that for the 10 years needed. Is there any way of like holding the land and you know, renting it back or something, so you don't have that big cost at the end? And I don't understand why if a two-lane road is going to be four-lane for a industrial area, how come development fees wouldn't pay for that instead of coming out of the NPO budget?
Those are good questions, and I would suggest, as you're going to be a new permanent member of this board, that you and Nick set up a meeting, and he can bring you up to speed and answer most of your questions. Also, would encourage any members to attend the MPOAC training, which I know Commissioner Materio is going to next weekend. They offer it several times a year. It's a very intensive about the whole MPO process, but it's very well done. Further member comments, Mr. Kretzky?
Just one last item with regard to Old Board Florida. I'm just curious of the hidden cost. A few years ago, the town tried to spar with FEC. No one ever wins. You know, they were increasing our lease payments to the right of the public across the tracks. At the same time, they wound up demanding that we had to start providing liability coverage for them in the event of accidents. So I wonder when Old Board Florida comes through and increased safety risks, does that mean that all the local governments, including the county, are going to have to start bearing costs to indemnify Old Board Florida? I would hope we address that now, since that's not a status quo entitlement.
It's in those crossing agreements that we're going to hammer out.
Awesome.
It addresses a lot of
those.
Well, I mean, we haven't signed them with them, but that's going to be each of our municipalities going to have to negotiate those out with
but
them.
But I'm just suggesting that each municipality by themselves is going to lose.
No, I understand what you're saying.
So I'm asking here that why not make it, look, if they're going to come through, they're not going to have the privilege FEC has, period.
Yeah. Good point. Okay, further discussion. Commissioner Opel.
Just one question. Thank you. The reason I was late is because I was attending a workshop, not a workshop, but a chamber breakfast this morning. It was put on by the Secretary, Mark Wilson, right? Who's did the whole presentation on Florida Made for Trade. This is a new brochure they're putting out, and it's very interesting, the parallel paths that they're taking for the 2040 plan for trade as opposed to this. I was wondering if we're interfacing in any way, Nick, with them on what they're proposing or what we're seeing in some of the maps and drawings. It seems like there's some definitely interaction here.
And the short answer is yes, and ironically, if I could point to the back of the room, to Todd Brower as well. Todd, White House Group is the consultant for the three MPO regional initiative to develop a Southeast Florida regional freight plan. And they're paying close attention to the efforts of that group as well as the statewide initiatives that are going on with respect to freight investments to make sure that those the outcomes of those studies are accurately reflected in our long-range plans as well.
Very good.
Excellent. Our next meeting, I think that's a typo, is April 20th.
Thank you.
That is correct.
I don't think that's a Thursday.
Yeah, I don't think that's.
I'm not sure what day that is, but I was
17th.
April 17th sounds
April,
like the right.
April 17th.
Sorry.
Our next meeting is April 17th, and with that said, we are adjourned.